are back, and not only are we on our Talk of Connecticut stations, you can listen to us online at talkofconnecticut.com, and we are also on Facebook. We are broadcasting our interview with Senator Markley on Facebook as well, and you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/talkofct.
They can see what we're wearing, they can see what we do. And
they know that we're expecting rain on Friday because you're wearing your raincoat in the studio this morning.
Don't believe everything he tells you, friends.
Well, all you have to do is go on Facebook.
I know. A yellow one, right?
Yeah, a yellow one. That's a sharp rain jacket, by the way. Joining us in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair this morning is Senator Joe Markley. Senator, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Well, always a pleasure. I just hope they can't see what I'm wearing.
Say, I'll tell you something. You are really, you know, we love having you on the program, and this question, has Connecticut's governor lost his mind? When did you think that went up? That'll get you.
Well, you know, I start out by quoting this supposed Einstein saying that this insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. I hear it all the time, and I think the reason I hear it all the time is I'm in Connecticut and we're doing it. And I thought that's exactly what Malloy has done, and the Democratic legislature, I have to say, I can't just blame the governor, in repeatedly raising taxes, which
you're right,
will result in us being having deficits, and then doing it again and doing it again and doing it again.
You know, it's interesting, Senator, because the other day on my CT on the Hill program, I actually played a clip from Face the State 3 years ago when Governor Malloy went on there and proposed, and this was in his interview with Dennis House, a reduction in the sales tax, and this was just a mere 3 years ago, down to 5.99% by November of 2017. And now he's talking about an increase to 6.99%.
And an increase in one of the worst taxes is he's talking about increasing is the real estate conveyance tax.
That's right.
And, you know, that's a tax that nobody thinks about until they sell their home and suddenly realize how radically they get whacked by the state for nothing. I mean, this is just a case of the state saying, hey, some money is changing hands. Let me grab a little bit of it.
Well, this is my argument. He finally has found a way to stop the out migration, and that's to make it so costly to move out of Connecticut with this proposal.
We're laughing about it, but it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And you know, Brad said before about how did I think of the notion of this article. Another reason is, I see members of our congressional delegation seriously talking about Trump's sanity. And I think if you're going to start getting into that kind of thing, let's look at what's happening right here close to home and what's behind it. I feel like it's a worldview. It's a refusal to accept reality. It's the conviction that you're so sure about what you believe that the evidence of the facts can't change your mind. And it's very dangerous for the state of Connecticut.
Joe, I have wanted to ask you a question, and we're going to clip sports. We're not going to get to sports now because we got you here. But what can we do? You know, we talk and we talk and we talk, and we know what the problem is. When can we change so that we won't be taxed to death like we are?
Brad, the only chance that the people really have to change things comes in November, and it's going to be a big chance this November because we're going to have a new governor, and we're going to have the chance to vote for every single member of the legislature. The legislature is very, very close right now. The Senate is tied. In the House, only four votes change and would change control. And I can't help but be partisan about this. I feel the Democrats, these current Democrats, have proven that they see the world in a way that says there's no end to how much they'll raise taxes. The only chance, I think, is to put the Republicans in control. I wish we had your friend Bill O'Neill in charge, a man that opposed the income tax, a man that presided over a time of prosperity. But I'm afraid that kind of Democrat, Bill O'Neill, Ella Grasso, just isn't there anymore. We've got a radical party with Dan Drew and Joe Ganim, and they can't be trusted with control of this state.
Joe Markley. Joe, I'm glad you mentioned that because I had a caller very early this morning that was taking O'Neill, said he was a lousy governor and everything. He's the longest serving governor, and I'll never forget when he told me personally, okay, that he will never, never put in an income tax. And he fought it and fought it and fought it, and you just mentioned it.
Yeah, and he was a gentleman, and it's a lost breed, and we're poorer for it, Brad. He was a good, decent man.
I think, by the way, the Lowell Weicker promised he'd never put in a state income tax either, right?
I said Bill O'Neill was a good, decent man. I wasn't talking about Lowell Weicker.
I'm just kidding. But that's what Weicker said. Remember that campaign?
I do.
Oh, yeah. I remember. Yes. It would be like putting gas on the fires of recession. And he was so right. This is the problem, is that we deal with politicians who are right when they're campaigning and then wrong when they're governing. Yeah. We've got to find people that believe in principles and that can be trusted once they get into office.
Okay, Senator, hold those thoughts. I know, Brad, we're coming up on traffic, and then we'll be back with Senator Joe Markley.
At 17 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock in the morning, 1-888-574-2723, and let's check that traffic. And Cindy, how's the bumper-to-bumper crowd doing on this Wednesday morning at this hour?
Well, Brad, we have made some progress out there. We had the earlier incident on Route 8 southbound. It's all cleared away, that crash in Derby, but delays do remain. Exits 18 through 14, 72 East, exit 2, left lanes out with a spin out into a snowbank right around the 84 merge. Heavy delays coming out of Bristol. 2 West now with a minor two-car crash being pushed off onto the shoulder near exit 5A for Main Street. And if you're taking a ride on 91 South, you're slowing Windsor Avenue into I-84. 84 westbound's busy from the Bulkley Bridge into Sigourney Street, and eastbound you're on the brakes through Waterbury and also approaching I-91. And this report is brought to you by Connecticut Toyota Dealers. The Toyota Highlander is loaded with an incredible amount of advanced safety features, because when it comes to safety, you can never have enough Toyota. Let's go places. I'm Cindy Waitman, back at 7:34 with your next traffic check on the Talk of Connecticut.
And my dear friends, just let me remind you that also bringing you all of the traffic, Bouvier Insurance. Great insurance company. I know many of you have done business with them, and they've been one of our sponsors for a long time. Bouvier Insurance with our traffic. 19 minutes after 7 o'clock, Daniel.
Brady's back in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair, State Senator Joe Markley. And, Senator, in your National Review piece, and by the way, I suggest people go to National Review online, and you can read his piece. Just Google Joe Markley, or search Joe Markley once you get on the National Review website. In your piece, Senator, you write, "The insanity is not confined to Malloy. The left wing of his party demands ever higher taxes on top earners, ignoring the exodus of wealth such increases have caused." Talk about that.
Well, I don't know how you can deny it if you deny the evidence of your eyes that people are leaving who can afford to leave, the very people we can't afford to lose, the people that pay the most in taxes, entrepreneurs, people that start businesses, people that can invest in businesses. If you don't know that anecdotally, there was a study that Yankee Institute put out just recently that says we're leading the country in the amount of income we're losing to other states. And that's not adjusted for the size of Connecticut. That's in an absolute sense. That's how many people are leaving. I'll tell you anecdotally, I'm running for lieutenant governor, which means I'm getting around the state a good deal. I was down in Greenwich visiting a lovely woman in a beautiful home of the sort that you find down there. And I said, "What a nice street you're on." It was a dead-end street with maybe 8 houses on it. And she said, "Do you know every house on this street is for sale?"
Wow.
And of course, being from Southern
everyone?
I said, "I didn't see any signs." She said, "Well, you don't see any signs in Greenwich." but they're all on the market because people are trying to get out while they still can get the value. They see what's happening to the state. And really, we've passed the tipping point. People keep talking about a tipping point. We have tipped, and the wealthy people are sliding out of this state as quickly as they can.
No question about
that. But, Joe, would you answer a question? And this is what drives me crazy, and I'm sure it gets Dan going, too. I can't understand why the leadership in the state now, whoever they are, don't understand this and don't realize that something has to be done before we lose it all.
Well, in this article we're talking about in National Review, I use the example of the doctors that for hundreds of years used to bleed their patients when they were sick. And, you know, so you'd get sick and they'd say, we better take some blood. Oh, he's getting weaker. Take more blood. Oh, he died. Well, we didn't take enough blood. And I feel like those doctors could never have admitted to themselves that they were doing harm to their patients instead of good. And I honestly feel the same way about liberal politicians who think the prescription for everything is more taxes and more government spending. And even though they see our economy dying, they can't admit to themselves that their policies are what's put this state in the situation it's in. But that's the truth. I think it's hard to give up on a belief, especially if you've held it for 20 or 30 or 40 years.
Well, Senator, I think you know this, but I believe most of the people in Connecticut aren't aware of this. The media is not reporting on it. There is a big upheaval taking place right now in the state Democratic Party. There is an effort out there to tilt the Democratic Party even more to the left. And I'll give you two examples. We all know about Josh Elliott, who's in the legislature, and he wants to purge the party of any Democrat that doesn't toe the Bernie Sanders line. You've got Andrew Fleishman, who I never considered a conservative, he's a liberal Democrat, he's being challenged in West Hartford by Jillian Gilchrist because they believe Fleishman isn't liberal enough. And you got Tony Harp on board, the mayor of New Haven, siding with Josh Elliott down there in Hamden, saying that she agrees the party needs to be purged and tilted even more to the left. And Dan Drew was upended last night in his town committee meeting in Middletown. He's to the left, and they're saying he's not left enough. So what do you make of all of this?
Well, I think it's going to be good news for the Republicans in the long run, because the more radical the Democratic Party becomes, the more people are going to realize where I started, that this is no longer the party of Bill O'Neill and Ella Grasso. This is the party of Bernie Sanders here in Connecticut. It's really a socialist party, and their agenda is all about more government action, more government spending, more regulations, exactly the kinds of things that I've seen destroy this state over the course of my lifetime. And voters have got to wake up to this fact, the fact that your state representative may be a nice guy or a nice gal, but look at what they believe in and how they vote and decide whether you think that's what we need in Connecticut.
Now, another question. Are there enough Democrats? Okay, you mentioned Bill O'Neill, who was a Democrat, but he was a conservative and no way would he go with the income tax. I mean, he talked about that all the time. But are there any Democrats left like that that could turn the tide the other way and help the Republicans?
Well, we saw it happen when a Republican budget passed this last session because of some courageous Democrats that stuck their necks up. My good friend, I sit next to her in the Senate, Joan Hartley, and a couple of others in the Senate and a handful in the House. And those are the very people now that are the targets of these radicals. That's what they want to purge out of their party. We can't count on the politicians to do it. It's up to the voters to stand up and say, we don't want to keep going down this road. And certainly there's enough Democratic voters, because there's so many people in this state. I represent a lot of them over in the east end of Waterbury. Good, hardworking homeowners who are Democrats because that's their heritage almost, but who understand the need for hard work and personal responsibility and don't want government on their back. And those are the folks that are going to have to take a hard look at the candidates and say, okay, maybe he's a Republican, but he believes what I believe. They voted for Ronald Reagan back in 1984. I remember that. And they could vote for a good Republican that could make the argument.
You know, Senator, you are so right. That is what is driving this upheaval within the Democratic Party, the fact that some conservative Democrats actually sided with Republicans on that first budget. And in fact, the Democrats then in the second budget, which was passed, had to compromise with the Republicans. That is what is driving this party's tilt to the extreme left.
That's right. And their frustration that some of the craziest ideas that they've brought forward weren't able to get a hearing or a vote in the legislature because there were so many moderate Democrats who said, if I vote for that, you put some of these things out for a vote and you put somebody on the spot because they say, if I vote against this radical agenda, then I'm targeted by the left of my party. But if I vote for it, then in the general election, I'm going to lose to the Republican because unless you're in one of the big cities, these seats are not safe. The seats in my area, Republicans gradually have been picking them up and will continue to do so if we can have good candidates and get the message out.
Joe Markley, our special guest, has Connecticut's governor lost his mind, the National Review article that he has contributed. Now, overwhelmingly in the state of Connecticut, do you believe we are as liberal as we are made out to believe? Do you believe it?
Absolutely not. And again, Brad, you say we had 20 years of Republican governors. They didn't always govern as Republicans, in my opinion, but they were Republicans. We had, until fairly recently, we had 3 out of 5 the congressmen Republicans, Rob Simmons, Nancy Johnson, and Chris Shays. We're a state that voted overwhelmingly for Ronald Reagan twice. The state has changed some since then, but as I said, I don't think it's changed fundamentally. And when I knock on doors in the east end of Waterbury, I find it's still the same people that I was dealing with my first time around in politics back in the 1980s. As I said, often ethnic Democrats, but with very conservative values, very conservative fiscal values, and often conservative social values that don't like the changes they see in our society. The Republican Party has to have the courage to speak about these issues and be clear about where we stand, because that's the only way they'll vote for us is if they know we believe what we say.
Now, Senator, you mentioned courage. Before we let you go, the last time we had you on, we correctly predicted that Governor Malloy would nominate Andrew McDonald as the Chief Justice of the Connecticut State Supreme Court. Since then, Tim Herbst has come out criticizing that nomination, as you criticized it before it actually happened, on the premise that this is an activist judge who was an activist lawmaker, and now he's going to occupy the highest judicial seat in the state. He came out and said that and was immediately tagged by Representative William Tong as a bigot. What do you say to stuff like this when you try to argue on the merits and then you're labeled?
Well, of course, it's a way of stifling speech. And I think one of the things we have to say about it is, if we really believe in equality, and I think we do. I don't just say I think I do. I think as a society we do. We feel people should be judged, as Martin Luther King said, by the content of their character and not by the color of their skin, and not by their sexual preference, not by any of these things. Okay, that means that we have the right to talk about these issues, that the fact that somebody is of a different race or a different gender or a different sexual preference neither means that they should be attacked for it, nor that they should be spared attacks for it. They should be talked about just like anyone else. That, to my mind, is what equality is all about. And I thought it was ridiculous for Representative Tong to criticize Tim Herbst for his remarks. In fact, I read the remarks after I saw Tong's criticism, and I just scratched my head because I didn't see anything that Herbst had said that was bigoted or deserved that kind of complaint.
Well, Dan was right on that one. There was no question. I could not believe it. I could not believe it.
I think there's going to be a fight over this nomination. And again, we'll see if there's, all it would take would be one Democrat in the Senate, assuming the Republicans hold against it. And we'll see what happens.
All right. Now, does it go right to the full Senate, or is there a hearing before the Judiciary Committee?
Oh, there will be a hearing before the Judiciary Committee, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm serving for the first time this term on the Judiciary Committee, so I'll have a chance to hear him and to ask him questions. In fact, just before you called, I was going through some of the testimony that came up when he was nominated to try to get an idea of a line of questioning when I have the chance.
Senator, we're out of time. Thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure, gentlemen.
Take care.
7:30, we'll be back.